Sean, you are back from Newfoundland. The Nashville Predators and San Jose Sharks, they're back from Prague. Nashville, 2-0. Good start. And the season is underway. And we're recording this Monday, Sean. Tuesday night in Madison Square Garden, the North American schedule gets underway. We're back in hockey season now, man.
We are. And the Newfoundland trip was fantastic. It was good to be out there. The 18-hour trip home because of flight delays didn't even bother me. That's how good the trip was. But yeah, no, tomorrow we'll turn on the TV and what, 7 months of nonstop hockey starts with some pretty good games and some pretty good matchups. I mean, you look, Rangers and Lightning, two cup favorites out of the East, and maybe the two best goalies in the NHL.
That's a pretty good segue you just had right there, because that is a big question, right? That's our big question. It's a state your case on NHL.com this week is who's better, Igor Shesterkin or Andre Vasilevsky? Now, before we get there, I mean, I want to pump this up. We're going to play an interview with Jacob Trouba, the new Rangers captain, who I think we know what his answer would be. It would be Shesterkin, and he'd probably give a good reason why, since he plays in front of him. I also have a feature up on Jacob Trouba, the defenseman for the Rangers. It's on NHL.com right now. Definitely go and read that. Part of the interview that you're going to hear on this podcast is in that story as well. But let's get back to the big question at hand here, because look, you're right. These are two Stanley Cup favorites, or at least Eastern Conference contenders. The Lightning have represented the Eastern Conference in the Stanley Cup final the last 3 years, winning two, losing to Colorado last year. And the Rangers got to the Eastern Conference final last year, and the Lightning beat them in six games. And it's Igor Shesterkin and Andre Vasilevsky. There's a lot of great players on both teams, but when it comes down to it, it's those two guys that carry a lot of the weight of those teams. So I'm going to let you open the floor here. So it's a state your case. Mike Morial and Tracy Myers from our staff on NHL.com, Mike Morial from the NHL Draft Class podcast, by the way, they argued this. We're going to argue this right now, but I don't know what side, by the way, I have no idea what side you're going to take right now. So I'm going to give you the floor. Who's better right now, Vasilevsky or Shesterkin? And then I'll tell you if I agree or disagree and why.
I don't really care whether you agree or disagree.
It's not surprising.
That's okay. And the state your case runs tomorrow on Tuesday. So we're previewing it a little bit, but to me, the answer is simple. It's Vasilevsky. Look at his fingers. He's got two shiny rings on his fingers. He's got it. He's got a Vezina. So does Shesterkin. He won it this year. Look, Igor is a good goalie. He's a great goalie. Someday he might be the best goalie in the world. He isn't right now. His countryman is the guy that he kind of grew up saying, that's who I want to be. He's still in the process of being him. I don't think there's anybody better than Vasilevsky right now. I mean, he has the resume to prove it.
I wanted so badly to disagree with you, but I just can't wrap my arms around disagreeing with you on this one. And look, for a lot of the reasons you said it, but Igor Shesterkin is a terrific goalie. He had the best season in the National Hockey League among all goalies last year. 36 wins, a .935 save percentage, a 2.07 goals against. He had the best season. He has to do it for 4, 5, 6, 7 more seasons in order to be in the category of the best in the league, because the best in the league, to me, do it year after year after year. You don't just have one best season. You have five pretty close to the best seasons, and that makes you the best. And that's where Andre Vasilevsky is at right now. You mentioned the rings. You mentioned playoff success, regular season success. He continually does it year after year after year. It's not a knock on Igor. Igor hasn't had the chance to do it year after year after year yet. So that's goes into this, but he even said it himself. I sat down with him a couple of weeks ago at the Rangers practice facility, and we did an interview. It was all in English, no cameras, so he was able to speak all in English. And he even said it himself. He goes, I have to go out this season and prove that last season wasn't a mistake. It's one season. Now, if you go back to when he debuted in the NHL, he does have the best save percentage of any goalie since that time, since January 7th, 2020, Igor Shesterkin has 62 wins and a 928 save percentage. No goalie who's appeared in 20 or more games since that time has a better save percentage. And he's third among goalies with his 2.31 goals against average in that time. It's a lot of stats right there, but it shows you that in a 100-game span, he has been arguably the best. But that's not enough. That's just not enough of a sample size. He has to do it again this season. And then I would argue, because I think Vasilevskiy is going to have another great year, and I think the Lightning are going to be very good again, he's going to have to do it again the following season and the season after that. And that's, to me, how you then proclaim he's the best in the NHL. So, yeah, I wanted to disagree with you, man, but I just can't.
Yeah, look, and I think you can go back to Shesterkin's KHL days, right? And kind of add that into the argument and say, well, maybe it is a bigger span. But to me, the biggest thing for a goaltender in the NHL is to be able to put it together over and over again. Like, what makes Vasilevskiy so good to me is that there's never any question. John Cooper just says, go, big cat, your turn, 65 games a year. There's nobody in the league that does that anymore. Mm-hmm. Saros last year, yeah. Again, first time. Like, let's see him do it again. And I don't think anybody understands how mentally and physically draining being a workhorse in the NHL is today compared to even 10 years ago. And there's nobody that does it on a consistent basis like Vasilevskiy does. So that's the other thing. His numbers might not be quite as good, but he's just the most dependable goalie. Like, there's just never any question.
Yeah.
You just fill out the card and you say, okay. And I think, you know, John Cooper, barring injury, looks at the schedule and picks the games the backup's going to play, and that's it. Like, and he doesn't worry about his goaltending for the rest of the year. What a luxury.
It's a huge luxury, and it's the luxury. I mean, you can argue that Gerard Gallant from the Rangers has that luxury as well with Shesterkin, but the difference is that I'll just go to last season. Vasilevskiy played in 63 games last season. Shesterkin played in 53 games last season, right? So right there, you're talking about a difference in 10 games. That's a big sample size, 10 games, right? This season, though, the Rangers are going to need 60 games out of Shesterkin, I think. Alexander Georgiev was their backup, and they treated Alexander Georgiev as a 1B, essentially. They gave him some games. They allowed Shesterkin at random times to have back-to-back games off so he could work with Benny Allaire, the goaltending coach. And Henrik Lundqvist had that same luxury at the end of his career because Georgiev was the backup and they trusted him. I don't think he's not as good. And Colorado's going to find out really what Georgiev is made of this season because the Avalanche have him as their number one goaltender. By the way, later on in this episode, we're going to play an interview that we did with Nathan MacKinnon from the Avalanche as well. So you'll hear from Jacob Trouba from the Rangers and Nathan MacKinnon from the Avalanche. But look, I mean, Colorado's going to find out about Georgiev more than the Rangers ever did because they're going to play him probably 50 games this season if he's healthy. Whereas the Rangers are probably going to have to go with Halak now as their backup. They're going to have to go with 60 to 65 games from Shesterkin is my guess. That's kind of where I'm at with this season. You know, I mean, Halak played 17 games last season for the Vancouver Canucks. That Thatcher Demko was the guy that they rode. Now it's got to be Shesterkin. So let's see with more workload in a regular season, how he handles it. I don't think it's going to be a problem. I think the guy's legit. I think he's really good. He was the best in the league last season, and he's among the best in the league. And that's not the argument here. It's who's the best right now, and it's Vasilevskiy because of everything he's done. But it's another test here for Igor Shesterkin because he doesn't have the same type of insulation, shall we say, that he had last season. He's got more of the insulation that Vasilevskiy has had in Tampa.
Yeah, I think Vasilevskiy has played in a more wide open system. They count on him to make some big saves for them. And then, you know, when we talk about him being a workhorse, had 25 games every year for the last 3 years. He's played a full regular season in the last three playoffs. He's added a season to his numbers. So there's no question to me that he's the best. Like, it's not even an argument yet, because of the depth of Vasilevskiy's abilities and the games that he's played in. He's played in huge, huge games and responded. His numbers after a loss in the playoffs are ridiculous. Like, that's the true test of a goalie, and there's nobody better in the world than Andrei Vasilevskiy right now. And by the way, unbelievable at Player Media Tour. I can see why nothing bothers that cat.
Yeah.
And excuse the pun, because he is the big cat. But nothing bothers him. He laughs. He has a heck of a time. I was surprised. That is as open and forthright as I've ever seen him, because we usually, especially for the last 2 years, have gotten him at a podium. To see him one-on-one with Darren Millard, who does the chirp, and to see him open up and really have a good time with that conversation was, to me, completely eye-opening. It was a personality I had never seen before.
You know, I got to tell you, if I had the same experience with Shesterkin when I sat down with him at the Rangers practice facility a couple of weeks ago. Nobody was there to hear it except one of the Rangers PR guys. But because it wasn't a podcast, it was just, you know, me and him doing a one-on-one interview. But same type of thing. I had the same thought there that I had when we heard Darren Millard do the interview with Andrei Vasilevskiy. It was like, wow, he's got a personality here that we have not heard. And I kind of knew it was hidden there with Shesterkin. So to me, it's we've seen what Vasilevskiy has done. And now I'm just so curious to see what Shesterkin's going to do. How is he going to build on what he did last season? He ran away with the Vezina. He had 29 out of 32 first place votes. He was third in the Hart Trophy voting. He had the best season of any goalie in the league. It wasn't even close. It wasn't a question, right? But again, as we said, he's got to do it over and over again to be the best. Back before we play this interview that we did with Jacob Trouba, which, by the way, you and I both had a blast doing, because when he started talking about painting with his buddy in Brooklyn, New York, that was maybe one of the highlights of the whole thing. But I wanted to ask you a question. I'm doing a story right now, 10 questions entering this. Well, 10 questions, you know, as the season gets going here. One of them is, are the Lightning still the favorites in the East? Right. So they've represented the East the last 3 years in the Stanley Cup final. But you got to remember, a big part of that team was the core, right? And that core broken up a little bit now. Andre Palat with the New Jersey Devils. One of the best playoff performers in Tampa Bay Lightning history. He's now with the Devils. Ryan McDonagh, that stout defenseman that could eat up those 22, 23 minutes a night. He's now, we've already seen him play a couple of games with the Nashville Predators. So do you look at them, at the Lightning, and say, yeah, they're still the favorite in the East? Or is it have they come down a little bit, and maybe Carolina and the Rangers and Florida and perhaps Toronto have stepped up a little bit to bridge that gap?
Well, we did our predictions last week, so you know the answer, Dan, if you're paying attention. I think Carolina's the favorite. They're who I have from the East going to the Stanley Cup playoffs.
I have them too, but it's about entering the season, though. Do you think that the Lightning are still, you know, I mean, I think at the end of the season, the Lightning won't have enough at the end of the season. Just, they might just run out of steam.
See, I don't think so. I think they're going to be good again. I think they're going to get deep. You know, I could see them being in the Eastern Conference Final. There's just too much talent there. And the goaltending, like we've talked about, is just ridiculous. It makes up for a host of sins. Will they miss Ryan McDonagh? Yeah. Will they miss Palat? Yeah. But they miss Blake Coleman. They missed a ton of guys. They've had to rebuild their third line how many times, right, because of the salary cap. And they just keep finding new pieces to plug in. So I and that veteran core is still there, right? Like Stamkos, Kalorn, all those guys, Hedman, they're not going to let that standard slip. So they'll be there. I don't think there's a question about it. You know, they've had a longer off season than they have for the last 2 years, just because we're back to a normal schedule. So they're still among the complete class of the East. The Carolina in the end might be better. They're younger, they're hungrier. They have a better defense. They don't have better goaltending, but they have a better defense. You know, if they can find a second line center to replace Trocheck, they're going to be really, really dangerous, in my opinion. So I just think it's their time, but not because Tampa's time has gone. Like, Tampa's still there, and they'll be there next year. I don't think their window is closed. I don't even know that it's closing.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think they're going to be right there, but I just they've made it 3 years in a row. I find it very hard to say it's happening a fourth year in a row. That's why I said Carolina too. But they open up in Madison Square Garden Tuesday night against the New York Rangers, and you also have the Vegas Golden Knights and Los Angeles Kings at Crypto.com Arena opening that night. And as we get going here in North America after playing two games in Prague, Jacob Trouba will be on the ice for the Rangers in that game. We were able to sit down with him in Las Vegas at the NHL's Player Media Tour last month. Really good stuff from Trouba on a lot of different topics, including how he is now an artist. Here's that interview with Jacob Trouba.
So did you ever envision yourself being a captain of a National Hockey League team?
A long, long time ago, yes. It's actually kind of a funny story. But right when it happened, I texted my dad and asked for, there's like a little notebook. It's actually a Notre Dame notebook because it was like when I was first visiting schools. And in there was like goals, and I'm pretty sure I wrote it down. So I had him go like dig it out because they like packed up my whole bedroom, and they found the notebook, and in there was like being an NHL captain. I was like 13 when I wrote it. So yes, but definitely not the Rangers. That's that's a little bit of a different animal. But challenges for this year, I think expectations are something that we're going to have to talk about and manage and deal with. I think as a group, we'll talk and I guess kind of figure out a plan to get back to where we were. We're not going to go into the season in the conference finals. We're back at square one, and it's going to be a fight to get back into the playoffs and then do what we do there. And in reality, we're down 3-1 in the first round, and we could have been a team that lost in the first round in five games, and this is a very different feeling and conversation that we'd be having this summer. So I think just understanding that, and obviously we believe in our group and our players and our coaching staff and everyone, and but we're going to set our own goals and not really deal with outside noise and expectations and kind of get a roadmap of how we feel we need to play and act and what we need to do to get back to where we want to be.
It's interesting you mentioned that because it's so close how quickly it could have ended, right? I mean, yep. It could have been five games, like you said, in one round and be done, and your summer would have been longer. We wouldn't be talking about the Rangers potentially being a Stanley Cup contender right now. It would be like, can they get back to the playoffs, right? Yep. I mean, that would be the situation. Does that kind of give you the perspective on exactly the next this challenge coming up, like how fleeting it could be?
I think so. I mean, I've talked to a number of people outside of the hockey world, and when someone has some success, what you do from that point is major. Like, you can go up from there, you can kind of stay there. A lot of people fall down and try to – you're not in last year. Last year's over. I think that's – we need to understand that we're back to day one. It's a new season, and you got to find a way to generate what we did last year and take the good things, learn from some of the things we didn't do well, but in the same breath, it's a new team, and you got to find a new identity and build from day one. It's not – last year's over. I think we got to feel good about turning the page and – be proud of what we did and know that we want to go further and do more and kind of come up with, like I said, the plan of how we're going to accomplish that.
Is that a conscious thing? Did you pick out people that you wanted to talk to about success and sustaining success?
Yeah. I mean, I've done it for the last 3 or 4 years of trying to grow as a leader, finding different people from different walks of life. I mean, I've talked to some former players, some business people, some CEOs, but then also some people who are floor managers that aren't really the top of the chain, but how do they handle their relationships with their bosses and what works for them? How do they motivate their salespeople? A lot of different elements, and everything's a little different. You can take bits and pieces on how it kind of translates to sports and hockey. I don't know if he cares I mentioned his name, but Peter Cunio is someone I've talked to a lot. He was... he's known as like a turnaround CEO. He was the CEO of Marvel and took them out of bankruptcy and sold them to Disney. And he has a lot of good opinions on leadership and what makes a good leader and how you rally people around you and the right way to do it. And he's someone that I've learned a lot from this summer, and I'm going to try to implement and grow and as a leader. And that's another thing I've kind of learned is it's not changing. You can't change as a leader. It's a natural growth that happens over time. You're not going to wake up tomorrow and be a different person than you were yesterday. It's, am I better than I was 6 months ago, a year ago? Have I learned? Have I improved? That's kind of the route I've taken, and just trying to continually improve on it and be better.
When did you start feeling comfortable doing this?
A lot's changed in my life, I would say, in 10 years. I was already talking to my wife a couple days ago. I was going to meet someone to, I don't even know what we were talking about. And she's like, you remember like 6 years ago, you wouldn't even call like the dentist to make an appointment. Like I had to do that for you. I was like, yeah, I didn't like talking to people. And now like she's like, now you like go out of your way to like meet random people in New York and go golfing with people you don't know. And it's been fun. I mean, it's a special place to have the opportunity to do that in New York. I guess not everywhere has that, I guess, for you to take advantage of. But yeah, I mean, it's been great. And I think I've just grown a lot as a person and changed. And yeah, I mean, it's been kind of a whirlwind.
It sounds like post-hockey, you have some interest in maybe business?
I don't know. We're going to play the hockey thing out as long as we can and see what happens. But yeah, just I think meeting people doesn't hurt, obviously. I'm not going to call it networking. I don't really do it to try to find a job after hockey. I'm just trying to grow and be better in what I can do today for the Rangers and for my teammates. And that's really the end goal behind it, is to, when there was a vacancy in leadership, not really a vacancy, but we had no captain for the longest time, and I thought that was a role that I could take on and something I wanted to get better at, and I thought I needed to get better at it. And so that's something I focused on the last 3-4 years, and I'm happy that it's, I guess, happened for me, and it needs to continue to get better, and I need to keep growing and learning.
How much do you lean on your wife for learning how to be a leader in terms of, you know, being a leader in a room? I mean, she's going through her residency right now, right? I mean, she's got to step up at times and stand out, if you will, right? And be a person that takes control if need be. Do you talk about these things?
Yes and no. I think she leaves a little bit of a double life where she comes is like the wife, and then she goes into work, and she's basically like a intern at the hospital. Yeah. And does a lot of the grunty work right now, and that's just how it goes. That's her career. But yeah, there's definitely moments that she's had a patient's, I can't really get into a ton of detail.
Yeah,
on her stuff,
yeah.
Like, she's been in the room by herself and a patient's heart has stopped, and like, she had to make that decision on what to do, and there's no one there holding her hand or telling her what to do anymore. She's and she finds a way to do it, and it's I've learned to stop asking how work was, because there's a lot of days where I don't want to hear what happened. But she knows, obviously, if she wants to talk about something, we talk about it. But yeah, I don't know. Her being around her is pretty, it's pretty special, being around someone who doesn't really do it for money. She grinds. She works 90 some hours for the last 2 months every week. And there's really no end game besides just, it's what she wants to do, and she wants to help people, and there's no, it's just refreshing to be around someone who doesn't do something for money or any other reason, just for personal fulfillment and wanting to help other people. It's she's pretty special to be around.
I was going to say, and just the gravitas of it, right? Like, life and death decisions. Like, you play a game, right? And we all think it's really important, and there's a whole business around it. But what your wife does is pretty important.
Yeah, definitely. I think stories she comes home with, some of the things she sees, the people she works with, patients, even other colleagues, other doctors. Yeah, I mean, she's out there doing more important things than I am, for sure. I think I know that, and I think it's, a lot of other people have come to understand that what she does is pretty special, pretty important.
How do you, so it's, season's going to start here. How do you manage your schedules? Is it like ships passing in the night a little bit at times?
Yeah, it's going to be an adjustment. I think I was glad she started July 1st, so we kind of had, I was home.
Yeah.
And we could kind of manage that, and so we've managed to figure our way through that, and then it's going to be a different situation when hockey season starts. Yeah, communication, we've learned, is the name of the game. That's when we have that figured out, we're good. It's just having things planned out and communicating, and things will be all right. And we're going to need some help. And we have some help.
Everybody needs help. So a little bit away, I mean, we just got a little bit away from hockey, talking about your relationship with your wife. You talked about loving to golf. Like, what are the other things that you like to do when you're not doing hockey?
I started a painting this summer with a friend in Brooklyn. Not a lot of people know that. I'm very into watches. I like collecting watches, obviously golfing, and then just different things around the city, I feel like, is what I spent a lot of time doing this summer, just kind of exploring and meeting up with friends. Like, Kelly was obviously busy working, and I'd meet up with different friends that I've met around the city and go do different things, dinners and whatnot, and that's how basically the summer was spent.
Painting, like, painting rooms or, like, artistic painting?
No, so one of our friends is, he is an artist, and he has a studio in Brooklyn. And so he's like, yeah, I told him, I was like, I don't know what I'm really going to do when Kelly starts working. Like, I'm not going to golf every day. He's like, oh, if you want to, like, come paint. I was like, eh, whatever, like, I'll try it. So we bought, like, a canvas, and I started, he taught me how to, like, mix colors and the whole nine, and I did a painting, and that's it. And
how no one gets that to painting? See it. I mean, what did your artist friend say?
It's done. He said it's fine. It's
done.
It's done. I'm not worrying about it anymore. The goal was to be able to hang it in the house. It's still not hanging yet. Okay. But it's up for display to see how the wife feels towards it.
Okay. Is this something you may pursue to do another one? Did you like it?
I actually did like it. It was kind of just peaceful. Like, it was just me and him in a room painting. I would do it again. Probably not during the season, but if you have like a month. I think we added it up. It took me 30 hours. So we need some time.
What's it of?
Oh, here we go.
Hey, you opened the box.
So the goal was to hang it in the apartment from day one. And so I figured, like, what could I paint? I didn't tell my wife. And I ended up painting a collage of all my wife's favorite things. And so that I thought would get hung on the wall, and it still hasn't got hung on the wall. So either means it's really bad or telling me.
You picked the wrong favorite things.
I picked the wrong things. That could be true, too.
Or you're just lazy and haven't hung it yet.
Well, I haven't got the green light to hang it.
You haven't got the green light.
That's more the issue.
But you realize everybody listening who's married, every male listening who's married, you just made them all feel terrible about their relationships because you've now painted something of all your wife's favorite things.
Yeah, but she didn't love it. Well, she claims she does, but like I said, it's not on the wall yet.
All right.
I don't know.
Jacob, it's the thought that counts.
Yeah, exactly. It's the thought. Yeah.
But it was actually fun painting, and I didn't want to paint like one thing, so it was a lot of like smaller things to see what I could paint and couldn't. It was a fun first thing to do, I guess.
Now, I did want to ask you, I want to bring it back one last time before we let you go to hockey, and it's more of like what your thoughts are. You're the captain of the New York Rangers now. You were very close to getting to the Stanley Cup final last year. Have you allowed yourself to imagine what winning the Stanley Cup in New York could be like?
Obviously, it's something I've thought about. It's kind of impossible not to. I've spent a little bit of time with some of the 94 guys and talked very briefly about it and just what it means and how special it is. And I mean, it's one of those things that's it's kind of undeniable what it would mean to be basically it's part of history, especially in New York. Like, those guys are around. They're forever Stanley Cup champions in New York City. Obviously that would be a special thing. And short answer would be yes. It's definitely something I've thought about.
Thank you so much for doing this. I love the painting story. May have to rehash that one again. All right. Thanks, Jacob.
All right. Thank you.
As I mentioned going in, Sean, that was great stuff from Jacob Trouba. You saw the personality in the new Rangers captain there. And by the way, we should mention that both games Tuesday night are nationally televised. It's a nationally televised doubleheader. ESPN has both of them in the United States. So it's Rangers and Lightning at Madison Square Garden, and it's Kings and Golden Knights at Crypto.com Arena right after the Rangers and Lightning. The Wednesday schedule includes the Colorado Avalanche raising the banner for the Stanley Cup championship against the Chicago Blackhawks before they play the Chicago Blackhawks at Ball Arena. And we will be playing an interview that we did also in Las Vegas at the Player Media Tour with Nathan MacKinnon coming up here pretty soon. But again, part of the 10 questions that I'm writing about for NHL.com, that story is going up, so it could be up by the time you listen to this podcast, is will the Avalanche have a Stanley Cup hangover? And it's a question going into every season for every Stanley Cup winner. Lately, there hasn't really been a Stanley Cup hangover. We've talked about it, you know, at the top here with the Tampa Bay Lightning, right? They win the Stanley Cup in 2020. They come back and they win it again in 2021, and they get back to the Cup final last year. Pittsburgh Penguins, right? Won it back-to-back years, 2016, 2017. The last team, in fact, that won the Stanley Cup and missed the playoffs the following year, I believe, is the Los Angeles Kings. They won it in 2014. They missed the playoffs in 2015. So the Cup hangover thing really hasn't been a thing.
But the Avalanche are also not the same team that they were last year. They have to replace 87 points from Nazem Kadri. Like, that's gone. That's with the Calgary Flames now. They have to discover if Alexander Georgiev is a number one goalie. Darcy Kemper was the perfect fit goalie for them last year. Didn't have to be great, just had to be good. Can Alexander Georgiev be that? He's now their new number one. They still have Pablo Franceau. And Gabriel Landeskog's hurt, and he's not going to start the season on time. And they played a lot without Gabriel Landeskog last year too, and they were able to survive it, and I get it, but he's such a big part of that team. He's the leader, the captain of that team, so he's not going to start the season on time either. I'm not questioning whether the Avalanche are a playoff team, but I'm questioning if the Avalanche can get off to the start that will avoid the narrative of Stanley Cup hangover.
Yeah, they can. You know why? Because of the guy we're going to talk to in a couple of minutes, Nathan MacKinnon. And they got this guy that plays defense.
He's pretty good.
Cale Makar. He's pretty phenomenal. And his partner, Devin Toews, is maybe the most, maybe he should take over the Alexander Barkov, most underappreciated player in the league, title that nobody wants. Because he's phenomenal. So, you know, and I don't even think Georgiev factors into the equation. I think Pavel Francouz could be their number one, you know, or they could have a 1A, 1B like the Bruins had for years where they alternated like they still do. You know, I think Pavel Francouz is a pretty good goalie. So I don't see a Stanley Cup hangover. Look, the Blues are going to push at their heels. So are the Predators. But they're still a class of their division and maybe the class of the West. So unless injuries happen, you know, there's going to be no mental hangover. And again, like I said, this off season is probably the longest one in 3 years.
Yeah.
Even for the Stanley Cup champion. So these guys have gone through a lot in the last 2 years and probably feel a little bit fresher this year than they did either of the last 2 years.
See, I think that they could struggle at the start and pick it up by November. But I think that they could have a bit of a struggle out of the gate. I do. Landeskog's injury, the uncertainty in net, finding a number two center. Those are all details that have not really necessarily been worked out in training camp. And they open up with a back-to-back Chicago-Calgary, you know, a home road back-to-back. They got a road trip out east. It's not the easiest schedule to start out here, and you're dealing with some questions that need answered. Now, would I be surprised, obviously, they're playing in Finland in the Global Series. So they travel there too, to play two against Columbus. So it's a lot of travel at the start of the season too, for this team. So I do wonder if they're going to get off to the start that we all think that they're going to get off to, which is just pick up from last year. I think they're going to have to be a team that come mid-November gets on a heater and writes itself. That's where I see the Avalanche this season, that it'll be good for them, be okay, that it'll be average, let's say, until mid-November. And then they'll be the team that gets on the heater.
Well, it could be, but is that a hangover? Or is that just a slow start? You're an expert. You tell me.
I think that that's a hangover.
Not a hockey expert, a hangover expert.
No. Well, I'd like to think I'm both. I think it's a Stanley Cup hangover, but I don't think it's one that's going to last the whole season. That's my point with them. That I think they figure it out and they rectify it and they get healthy, and assuming they get healthy and all that. But I do think that Colorado could. I'm trying to find the right word. I don't know if it's struggle, stumble, just be okay out of the gate here. And, you know, you're going to look in the standings when they come, you know, come mid November, and you're going to see Colorado like third or fourth in the Central. And people are going to be like, oh boy, what's going on with the Avalanche? And then they're going to look at the standings around Christmas time and you're going to see them first.
So it's like a road trip to see the Arizona Coyotes hangover and not a Vegas hangover.
If you want to call it that, sure, sure. I'll tell you what, a guy who probably doesn't see the hangover coming is Nathan MacKinnon. He's my pick for the Hart Trophy this season, because I think now that the monkey's off his back, he's going to be a lights out really good, but he's another guy. It's not just going to be, even through the first month of the season, he could be really good, and it's not going to be enough to carry them to wins every single night. But anyway, we were able to catch up with Nathan MacKinnon in Las Vegas at the Player Media Tour, and here is that interview with the now Stanley Cup champion center from the Colorado Avalanche.
Nate, you're a Stanley Cup champion. It's been a couple months now for that those words to sink in. Has it sunk in yet for you that the dream is realized?
It has. You know, even being here, you feel like you got a little more respect than the old Avs had. You know, we had some tough days, and even it's been a 180 from 12 months ago. It was all about what happened against Vegas. You know, why'd you blow it? You know, it's just funny now. Now it's about, can you repeat, which is a better conversation to have for sure. But you know, people are asking me if I've chilled out and everything. I feel the same. You know, I feel the same guy, and I think everyone is. If anything, we're just hungry to keep that feeling, because there's no better feeling than winning in the playoffs. The process of it all, how much we've learned as a group, and we have most guys back. You know, we've lost Berkey and Nas, obviously the two big guys, but everyone else is back, and whoever's new, we're excited to welcome them into our team culture and try to get another one.
Did you have a favorite moment with the Cup this summer?
Yeah, it was cool. I took it to a senior's home, a veterans hospital, and you know, the trophy is just so neat because people, the names on there are from when they grew up watching these players, you know. So they're looking at names, you know, from the 40s and 50s, their favorite players. That was pretty cool, I think. I would say that. Other than that, it was just fun to see. It's more about your family and friends and enjoying it with them than yourself on that day.
So. Did you have a moment like that where you looked at for a certain name that meant something to you when you got the Cup?
I just think all the names. I couldn't pick one. It's all the best players that ever play hockey are on there. So it's pretty cool to be a part of that. You know, I think we're on there for 60 years, and then we're in the Hall of Fame after. So be dead way before then. So I'll have it on the rest of my life, which is awesome.
So you had your Cup parade, and it was through Halifax. And I remember, and the story goes, I was at Sid's first one in 2009. You were too. The crowd,
Yep.
You were there in the crowd.
Yeah.
I wonder if you, did you think about that as you were parading through? Is there another Nathan MacKinnon in the crowd right now? Like a guy who 13 years from now will be doing this through here?
Yeah, that's funny. I did think about that. I saw a lot of young kids with signs, and reminded me of myself. It was cool. I think that really inspired me, subconsciously maybe. You know, at how old was I, you know, 12. I don't think at 12 you're really thinking too clearly about things, but I think subconsciously it puts it in your head that you can do it too. I think that's what it's all about, you know, especially where we're from. It's not like we're from the middle of nowhere, but there's no hockey, there's no NHL team. It feels like a distant thing a little bit. You know, not the biggest city in the world. So having someone like Sid bring it home and show it like that is kind of why I wanted to do a parade as well. So it was really cool.
Well, what do you remember from when you were 12 and the Cup came through Cole Harbour?
I remember where I was on the sidewalk. It was probably a 10-minute walk from my house that I grew up in. There's like a main, I think it's called Main Street. And he went through, and I think Talbot was behind him or in front of him in a car. Yeah. And it was great. Yeah, it was fun. A lot of fun.
Have you talked to many people about what awaits you this year? Other champions, guys that you know that have won the Cup and said, hey, you know, what's going to happen this year? What's going to be the biggest challenge? How did you deal with it when you tried? Because it's so hard to repeat. I mean, the team you beat is the only one besides the Penguins that have done it in 20 years now.
Yeah, I think we can't really worry about that. In my opinion, I think why we were so good is because we were just worried about ourselves and how we played and how we performed. And, you know, we're going to dictate the pace and dictate how the games go with our strengths, and we can't control if the teams are ready to go, if they're not, if they're going to play great or play bad. You know, we just have to play to our best, and hopefully that's enough, because it's overwhelming to worry about what the other team's going to do, because you just don't know. So
we're in Vegas right now. It's the entertainment capital of the world, so I wanted to switch the subject on you. In your mind, who is the most entertaining player?
I love watching Kucherov play. And I like guys. I like watching guys play who don't really play like me, because they make it look so easy. I don't make it look that easy out there sometimes. Like Kucherov, Panarin.
Yeah.
Who else doesn't have a like those guys look like their heart's beating when they're playing hockey. It's crazy. It's so fun to watch them play. Draisaitl, just guys who are just so smooth and have different paces, I guess. And I think it's a lot of fun watching those guys play.
And how many beats per minute is your heart going when you're playing?
Well, it's not. I guess it just looks like it's at 200, but yeah, it definitely. I'm a little more intense than those guys. It's the world could be ending, and Kucherov, you know, has the puck and it's just calm in the half wall. It's so cool to watch him play.
You guys are going to Europe this year. Is it a good thing? Because, like you said, you've made a few changes. You need to get focused on your team early. Everybody talks about long road trips being ideal for that early in the season. Is this an opportunity you're looking forward to as a team to kind of have that opportunity?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, in 2017, we went to Sweden, and it was big for our group to come together and bond and you know, have a couple beers as a team. You know, I think we played like 2 games in a week over there. So, you know, it's tough coming home from that, you know, a 9-hour time change. But I think it's worth it. It'll be fun to be in Mikko and Lekki's hometowns and see their culture and things like that. And, yeah, it's cool just kind of being away from everything.
Have you played in Finland before?
I played an exhibition game in the World Juniors, I think, in like 2012, but I don't remember much about it.
Yeah, in and out, right?
Yeah, quickly.
You get to spend a couple of days here.
Yeah, like you're in Helsinki for a day or two and you're gone. So,
what's your favorite place that you've played outside of, let's say, outside of North America? Like, do you have a favorite place to visit?
I think Prague, the 15 World Championships, was my favorite international event. You know, I think we went like 10-0 and won everything, and in Prague too, so it was fun.
Do you do a vacation like that? Do you ever give yourself the opportunity to, you know, get away, go overseas in the off season? Like, where do you go? What do you do? Where do you vacation?
I think my girlfriend would like me to vacation a little bit more than I do. She's on me a little bit. You just won the cup. Let's go somewhere. I'm like, you know, but no, I do. I like to get away and enjoy myself for sure. I've been to Europe in a couple of years just with COVID and stuff, but I do enjoy going over there. It's fun when you go to Worlds, actually, then you get to do a vacation after because you're already over there and stuff. So I've been to Italy and Paris and stuff before. But yeah, I definitely have some fun for sure.
Of course, the less you go to Worlds, the better.
Yeah, no, that's the idea. We haven't been there in a while, so I don't want to go back. I think I'm all done with that anyways, so getting old now.
I was going to say, all your success is messing up your travel plans, but I guess you'd take it. You can travel when you're retired, right?
Yeah, I mean, we retired hopefully around 40, and apparently that's ancient now, but most people, their life just gets going at 40. So, yeah, it should do that when I'm done, for sure.
So on an off day, if you're home, like, what are you doing?
I game a little bit,
yeah.
And I get into, like, I don't think about anything when I'm playing like Call of Duty or Fortnite or something with the boys. It's a lot of fun. I enjoy it, and I'll do it for like an hour, maybe on an off day or something. But maybe it's not what parents want to hear me say. but I definitely I didn't game much growing up, and then we have so much time. Like, as a young player, I was 18, 19, 20. I don't have any responsibilities or anything. So I'd play some video games. I'd start and, you know, you're done practice at noon, then you have all day off. So,
do you ever play the NHL game? Do you ever play as yourself?
No, I don't play hockey games. No, nope. That's the last thing I want to do.
That's not getting away from.
Yeah,
it, I guess.
No points, -3. I don't want to hop on a hockey game. So, no, thank you.
So, for the parents, though, we'll just say you set an hour. You set a time limit. You're disciplined about
it. And I didn't do it when I was growing up. So, I'll say that to the parents.
It's allowed now.
Yeah, exactly. Allowed I'm now. Allowed now. Yeah.
As Dan mentioned earlier, we're in the entertainment capital of the world. If we were to put on an NHL player's talent show, what would your talent be?
I don't know. Not much. one-trick pony here. I don't have much else to offer
the world. It's a pretty good trick.
Yeah, it's good, yeah.
Has anything about your... Have you changed your equipment? Have you changed your sticks over the years? Or have you been pretty steady with what you use?
I always try new stuff and then I go back to my old stuff. I always I see someone score and then I tell my equipment manager order their curve for me. I don't think he likes that very much. Yeah, I'm always trying to tweak things and change and get better any way I can. I think that's the thing I love about this game so much is that there's so many different ways you can be great and you can kind of try to pick different things from guys' games and get better at it. And it's always fun to find new ways to get better every season. I'm always trying to change and evolve with this game. I think the last thing you can do is just rely on what you did last year and hopefully it works because 5 years from now, it's going to be very old, what you do. So I think that's my favorite part.
So you fly a lot. You're going to fly to Europe this year. It's a long flight. On the plane, what guy are you? Are you the reader? Are you the streamer? Are you the card player? What's your vice on the plane?
I love TV shows, yeah. I watch TV shows. I always say I'm going to read, and I don't usually. I wish I did more. I do read a little bit, but mostly TV shows, yeah.
What are you into now?
Well, I love the Game of Thrones series, so I'm watching House of the Dragon now. Yeah, I love that show. So,
who's the biggest clown on your team?
Probably Eric Johnson, yeah.
Yeah. Is Cale Makar a clown at all, or is he always serious?
No, he's not a clown. he's not always serious, so he's a good sense of humor. He's just quieter. But yeah, he's you can joke around with him. It's definitely developed for sure. I think when he first came, he didn't really know what sarcasm was a whole lot, but now he's caught on to it because I can be pretty sarcastic with him. So.
And now he's a Stanley Cup champion. He's got all the trophies. I mean, he's got a little swag now that he can be this way.
Yeah. Right? He always had this quiet confidence to him, though, I think. You could see it. He'd be quiet in the room, but on the ice, he's assertive. And, obviously you can't be that great by not being confident in yourself. So, he's so special. And, I could go on about him for sure.
Do you think about the ceiling for him? He's such a young kid, right? He's already done so much. But like you, like by the time he's your age, like he'll still be improving like you were. I mean,
yeah,
the ceiling seems almost limitless.
Yeah, I think he's only 24 next month. And he's going to continue to develop. I think he's got another 10, 12 years in him of, who knows how many Norrises he'll win. I just don't. It's not even close, like for defensemen, no disrespect to anyone, but it's not even close. Like how he dominates a game from the back end is crazy. And he's a great leader for our team as well. He's really stepping into that. So maybe you wouldn't see as much fans, but he can develop into, he's getting more comfortable speaking and he's more comfortable in his own skin, I think, around the boys and stuff. And we love to hear his opinion. He doesn't give it a ton, but when he does, it means a lot. So I think he's really stepping into that as well.
I will let you go on this last one question. So a number of players that I've talked to, that we've talked to, have said the Avalanche are the favorites to repeat. They are the favorites right now. Are the Avalanche the favorites to repeat?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think so. I mean, obviously we have some new guys like we're talking about, but I feel good, and yeah, I feel like we learned a lot from last season, and it's a long 82 games, and I know everyone cares about the regular season a lot, but playoffs is when it matters, and we're excited to get there.
Good stuff, man. All right, thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Good stuff there from Nathan MacKinnon, Sean. Like I said at the start, I think the Avalanche could be okay, but not great out of the gate. We'll see. That guy could be great. Makar could be great, and that could be enough, but I'm not sold that it will be enough. So we'll see. They're a playoff team. There's no question about it. And they're certainly a favorite. Many people have them as a favorite, as they should be that. So we'll see where it goes from there. A couple other things before we get out of here. Again, back to the story, I'm doing 10 questions as we begin the season here. One of those questions, and we've hit on a few of them with the Lightning and the favorites in the East, Shesterkin. We hit on the Avalanche and the Stanley Cup hangover. One of those questions is about Alex Ovechkin. He's 114 goals away from Wayne Gretzky. How much closer will he get to Wayne Gretzky's record of 894 goals? Ovechkin scored 50 goals last year, became the oldest player in NHL history to score 50 in a season at 36. He's 37 now. Gordie Howe and Johnny Busick
are the only two players who have scored at least 40 goals in a season after they had already turned 37. I wrote about this in my mailbag last week. I don't know that Ovechkin hits 50 again. I'm not counting it out, but I don't know that he hits 50 again. But I definitely think he can get into the 40s, you know, this season. What is slowing this guy down?
Backstrom.
That's literally like the only thing. And Backstrom was barely healthy last year.
Yeah, well.
And he scored 50.
I think 35 is the high bar this year for Ovechkin. The team's not as good. The team's going to struggle more than it has. No Backstrom, no Wilson to open up space for him early in the year. I think it's just going to be a struggle, like just mentally and skill wise for a while here. So, and I think 35 goals would be amazing. Like, right. That's a number that what?
Not a lot of guys hit that number.
4%, not even.
Yeah.
The 2% of the league hits. So, right. I mean, there's guys that would sell their soul for 35 goals.
Well,
and at the end of it, we would be like, oh, what's now it's over. Ovi's done. 35 goals. What a bum.
Nope. No, you shouldn't say that because remember, he signed his contract back in July of 2021. It's a 5-year deal. And he had to average 33 goals, I think it was, per season in that 5-year deal to catch Gretzky's record. He had 50 in the first season. So that average now, he's 114 away. That average of the last 4 seasons is now down. He needs to average 28.5 goals to tie Gretzky, right? So let's just say 29, right? Like average 29, you surpass Gretzky in the next 4 years. If you're saying 35, I'm saying 40. Let's get conservative at 35. That puts him 79 goals away. Now he's down to 26.3 goals per season in the last 3. He's still making up for what he's still doing it. He's making up. 35 goals is a very, I would say, conservative number for Ovechkin this season. I think 40 is the mark. Again, for the reasons you laid out, Backstrom's out, Wilson's out. The team's just not as good anymore. But he still has the shot. He still has the ability to power a puck past the goaltender like we haven't seen in the last quarter century. And I say 40 for him. 40 goals puts him at 74 away. And look, 74 away again. He's in that 26, 25, 26 over the last 3 seasons. He's going to pass Wayne Gretzky. It's going to happen. As long as he stays healthy, which is the biggest question mark for any player, obviously, especially as they chase a record. As long as he stays healthy, he is going to pass Wayne Gretzky. And if he scores 35 to 40 goals this season, he just makes it way easier on himself for the next 3 years. You're 35. You're conservative, I think. So we'll see. We'll talk about it later on in the season.
That's
when
me.
He's got 35 come February 15th. You know, we'll have another conversation. The other question I wanted to get to that that's in that story I'm doing is on the Toronto Maple Leafs. And we've talked about this, Sean, in the past. Is do the Toronto Maple Leafs have a number one goaltender? And look, Mike Zeisberger, our colleague, was able to catch up with Matt Murray, sat down with him, did a sitting down with Q&A with Matt Murray, who is one of those two guys vying for that number one job. And I mean, they can't say they have a number one goalie because Matt Murray and Ilya Samsonov are still kind of in that mix of who's going to step up and who's going to be the guy. You're looking at two reclamation projects, essentially, right? I mean, Murray won back-to-back Stanley Cups with the Pittsburgh Penguins 2016 and 2017, but the last 3 seasons, 2 with Ottawa, his last one with Pittsburgh, have not been good. Ilya Samsonov was a number one draft, was a first-round draft pick. He was the goalie of the future in Washington. He struggled last season, and they didn't even offer him his qualifying offer. They didn't even extend him his qualifying offer, and it made him an unrestricted free agent, and he signed a 1-year deal with Toronto. So, I mean, I'm pretty sure the answer is no. They don't have a number one goalie as of right now, but do you think by the end of the season they will?
I would like to think that Matt Murray is going to be their number one at the end of the season because I'm really pulling for him to do that. Like, it's been a tough 3 years for Matt Murray. The injuries, the personal loss, and let's not forget, like, this has been a hard time for everybody. Like, we're back to quote unquote normal now, but the previous 2 years mentally were challenging for a number of people. And if you had other things going on while that was going on, it made it three times worse. So I would like to see Matt Murray come all the way back and be a goalie that can lead a team or help lead a team to a deep playoff run. I think he has a better chance to do it because he's done it before. Look, the Washington Capitals wanted Samsonov to be a number one. They thought he was going to be a number one, and they cut bait. And they weren't in a position to cut bait. They didn't have a number one waiting. They had to go spend free agent money to get one. So it was pretty clear to them that he was never going to be the guy. If you're not going to be the guy in Washington, which is a proud hockey market, has legitimate Stanley Cup aspirations, but is not Toronto, the center of the hockey universe, Dan, the center of the hockey universe, where all things hockey happen. You're not going to do it in Washington, and all of a sudden you're going to walk into the cauldron of criticism that is the Toronto Maple Leafs, where they're held to a higher standard by true hockey fans, and you're going to do it? I don't think so.
Man, sarcasm is dripping off of your microphone.
I mean, it's the center of the hockey universe.
It is.
It's where all things hockey happen.
Everything hockey happens in Toronto. But
I'm going to disagree. Their viewpoints are more valid than they are anywhere else. Those of the fans and of the media and of everybody else about hockey and what happens in hockey happens in Toronto. So
we're going to leave it alone. You did enough there, right there, with all that sarcasm. But here's what I'm going to say, that there's nothing wrong with pulling for Matt Murray to do it. I mean, he has been through some struggles. There's no question about it. But I think if it's somebody that's going to do it, I think it's going to be Samsonov. And he's 25. He has a pedigree. He didn't deliver in Washington. Could he deliver in Toronto? I think he's got a better chance to deliver in Toronto than Matt Murray does at this point in their careers. But I'll also say this. I think the Maple Leafs make the playoffs without really determining who is a number one goaltender. And I think that's a reason why they lose in the playoffs if they don't get one, because I don't think they have one.
No, and it's a horrible decision, right? Like, it's the thing. It's like not having a closer in baseball, right? And you try and pick, your decision's always going to be wrong because the other guy doesn't have to do anything, right? Mm-hmm. So you pick Matt Murray and he's bad. Oh, stupid Keefe. He should have went with Samsonov. How do you know? Samsonov right. Could have been worse. Or then they go to Samsonov and he's bad and, oh, he should have went with Murray. Or they go with both and neither one of them can get going. Like, it's just a nightmare. Like, you need a guy like John Cooper. If they lose in the first round, nobody's ever going to be like, he should have played his backup.
No, right.
Like, and nobody, you know, nobody's going to go to Bruce Boudreau and be like, dude, why didn't you play your backup? Or Dallas, like, you played Ottinger? What the hell's wrong with you, man? Your backup won 3 out of his last 5 games. You should have went with him. Like, nobody's going to question any of that. But no matter what Sheldon Keefe does down the stretch and into the playoffs, should have went with the other guy. He's better.
It's a brutal spot. And if you're Kyle Dubas too, you're pretty much putting your future with the Maple Leafs on this figuring itself out. And I just don't see it figuring itself out. Again, I think the Toronto Maple Leafs are good enough everywhere else to be a playoff team. Like, especially, I think Ottawa's better. I think Detroit's better. I think Buffalo's better. But and Boston with their injuries, we'll see where they are right now. But I still think Toronto is one of the top three teams in that division, even without a number one goaltender establishing himself, because they could score 4 a night. You know, I mean, they could score 4 a night on most every night that they play. But if you don't solve the issue, if they don't figure it out, one of these two guys, or they don't solve it through other matters, I don't see how you win in the playoffs with it like this. So, I can't be optimistic about the Toronto Maple Leafs ending this 18-year, almost 19-year drought of not winning a playoff round when your goaltending is as questionable as it is. And that's what I wrote in the stories. The last thing you want to do is enter a season with goaltending being your biggest question mark when you're a team that is considered a favorite, when your team is considered a Stanley Cup contender. And that's the lot in life right now for the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's what they have to deal with.
Yeah. And maybe they do. Maybe this is the year. Hope springs eternal, Dan.
Yeah.
And now that the Toronto Blue Jays are out, all focus turns back to the Maple Leafs. I mean, look, they'll pay attention to the Raptors. I guess they're going to be good again this year. But it's going to be the Leafs for the next 7 months, and every little thing is going to be questioned and dissected. And that's the beauty of living in Toronto. Look, all my sarcasm from earlier aside, it is perhaps the most passionate hockey market in the league. It's one of the top five for sure. And what comes along with that is a scrutiny and accountability that you might not get anywhere else. And it makes it difficult. You have to have the right players to handle it.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right on that. And speaking of right players, just to pub a little bit what we've already done. So you heard from Jacob Trouba and Nathan MacKinnon in this episode. Last week, we did our predictions, and you also heard from Austin Matthews and Zach Werenski. So Austin Matthews with the Maple Leafs. I talked a lot about his tennis game, though, so that was interesting. Previous episodes, heard from Roman Josi and Thomas Hertl. By the way, Hertl scoring in Prague, even though the Sharks lost the two games. When Hertl scored, that was a huge, obviously there's only been two games played in the NHL this season, but that could still be one of the best moments of the first half or whatever it is when he scored his goal. That has the ability to stand there.
It wasn't even the best moment from the Global Series.
No, but it was great on ice moment for Thomas Hertl. What was the best moment from the Global Series?
Jaromir Jagr dropping the puck. First of all, the dude looks like a rock star.
He's always been a rock star.
But he's
a rock star when he had the mullet. Come on,
he's getting up there now. Like and my favorite thing is the Jaromir Jagr broken record. I don't know if I'm going to play again. Maybe. And then playoffs come around and his team needs him and the team that he owns, and he's like, okay, I'll play. And then he's still a representative player at 47 now, but just seeing him come out and knowing that Hertl grew up idolizing him, everybody in that arena thinks he's a rock star, a god.
He is a legit rock star in Czech. There's no question about it.
So to me, that was the moment that he got to bathe in that again. And I know that it happens all the time for him, but. Just fantastic.
Yeah. No, that was great. I loved Hertl scoring. So anyway, you could hear from them in a previous episode and also Connor McDavid and Bill Daly in some previous episodes as well. And we've got a lot more to come, Sean. Again, Jacob Trouba and Nathan MacKinnon in this one. So much more to come as we drop the puck on the season here in North America. So we're going to sign off for now. And until next week, enjoy the hockey.